Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
This is DW's Africa Link program with me, Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Abubakar Jallo with your responses.
On the program today, the UN Security Council unanimously approves a 45% drawdown of its massive peacekeeping presence in Darfur, Sudan.
The decision of the Council is based on a joint review which was conducted by the AU and the United Nations in close cooperation with the mission on the ground. This must be welcomed. This is a good sign.
German Parliament has voted to make same-sex marriage legal.
Banning marriage for same-sex couples must end. Marriage for everyone must come. Anything other than equal rights is discrimination.
Congratulations to Germany. I am sure this represents the voice of Germans. That's a response from Johnson, and I will be reading more shortly.
And I can't wait to listen to those comments, Abu, on this show. But anyway, before all that, let's listen to some hot topics making news around the world.
This is DW News with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet. The German parliament today voted to make same-sex marriage legal. The historic decision comes just 2 months before the general elections. It grants same-sex couples enough equal rights, including the right to adopt children. Till now, same-sex partnership were allowed but not legal marriage. Chancellor Angela Merkel said she did not vote for the bill.
For me, marriage in our basic law is defined as being between a man and a woman. That is why I voted against this bill today.
A scaled-back version of President Donald Trump's travel ban on 6 mainly Muslim countries is now in force. Some provisions that led to protests in January and caused chaos in many airports have been stripped off, but it may still cause a new round of court fights. U.S. Customs and Border Protection spokesman Dan Hedlund said implementation would be orderly. South Africa's divided ruling party, ANC, is holding a major policy conference, but some party members boycotted the event as a show of discontent with President Jacob Zuma's leadership. ANC is expected to replace Zuma as party president at a meeting in December. His deputy Cyril Ramaphosa and his former wife Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma are seen as potential successors. You're listening to DW News. More than 440,000 Syrians who were uprooted within their country have returned home in the first half of this year. UNHCR spokesperson André Mechnik told reporters in Geneva that another 31,000 Syrians who had fled to neighboring countries had also returned home within the same period.
In Syria, we are seeing notable trend of spontaneous returns within and to Syria. Most of these people are returning to check on their properties, to find out about the family members. In some cases, they have their own perceptions about the security, whether there are real or perceived improvements in the security situation in the areas where they are going to.
At the same time, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the Islamic State group no longer has presence in Syria's Aleppo province after withdrawing from a series of villages where regime forces were advancing. Fallen former German Chancellor Helmut Kohl will tomorrow be laid to rest in his hometown of Speyer on the Upper Rhine. Prior to that, European leaders will gather in the European Parliament in Strasbourg in France to commemorate his services to the European Union unity. Kohl passed away on June 16 at the age of 87. And in sports, Britain's Andy Murray will begin the defence of his Wimbledon title against Alexander Bublik on Monday. The 30-year-old won the tournament for a second time last year. On the women's side, world's number one Angelique Kerber will face off Belgian's Kerstin Philipkins. For more news and information, visit dw.com or download the DW app. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
Welcome once again to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And with your responses, I am Abubakar Jallo.
The UN Security Council has unanimously approved a 45% drawdown of its massive peacekeeping presence in Darfur, the restive western region of Sudan. The Council voted to reduce the UN military presence in the region from 15,000 to slightly above 8,000 peacekeepers within 1 year, a move that comes as the UN considers cuts of around $600 million to the UN's total blue helmet budget for the coming year. But why would the UN Security Council vote to reduce the number of peacekeepers, yet the situation remains fragile in Darfur? A question I put to Peter Schumann, former director of the UN mission in Sudan.
The decision of the Council is based on a joint review which was conducted by the AU and the United Nations in close cooperation with the mission on the ground. And there was a report which was submitted to the Council on the 18th of May this year. So, you know, there was a long preparatory phase. Consultations took place. And I think what we are seeing now is maybe for the first time that the Security Council, in cooperation with its partners on the ground, including the African Union, has developed a medium and a long-term strategy to exit from a peacekeeping operation. I think this must be welcomed. This is a good sign.
Mr. Schumann, you say that it is a welcome sign, but in 1994, a similar scenario happened when the UN voted unanimously to reduce peacekeeping troops in Rwanda. What followed was a systematic massacre of close to 1 million innocent civilians.
I would not draw a comparison. Number one, we still have a sizable force on the ground. In Rwanda, we had a marginal presence of the UN, especially a marginal security presence. The Council has agreed, against the recommendations of the report, to increase the number of police a little bit. So I think the Council has recognized that stability and security is provided through the presence of police a lot more than through the presence of blue helmets. And I think that's a very important signal. I tell you, my main concern is, will the African Union and the United Nations, will they be able to mobilize competent, committed police contingents to really go around and provide stability and security at the community level? I think that's now a challenge for the international community. For example, to Germany. I mean, look at Germany. We have 24 of police officers in all United Nations peacekeeping operations. This is an unacceptable situation, and Germany must now really come up with a very clear decision to go be very strong with police commitments, in particular in this new scenario in Darfur.
Peter Schumann, former director of the UN mission in Sudan. Now, Abu, I see some people have raised concerns about the reduction of the UN peacekeepers.
A lot of questions there. We have Papa Ashin from Accra, Ghana. He says, UN stands to cut down on peacekeeping missions at this critical point in Sudan and in Congo. In a way, it's going to be worrisome. I think AU troops should just increase their numbers in there to help bring down the rebel forces.
And then one John from Rwanda says, I think that this resolution is unfortunate. Hope that this draft does not pass. Lewis Mutale says, this is not a good move.
And Christopher Mufflan from the USA wrote to say, budget cuts in peacekeeping missions will put pressure on the leadership in the DRC and South Sudan. How will these countries adapt to these new changes will determine if the savings from the cut helps or hurt the UN mission. We will know in a few months.
Many thanks, Abu. The German parliament has voted to make same-sex marriage legal. This historic decision grants same-sex couples equal rights, including the right to adopt children. Perhaps surprisingly, Germany was not at the forefront of this internationally. The hotly debated issue was suddenly pushed forward earlier this week after Chancellor Angela Merkel said lawmakers should be allowed to vote on the matter. This is a report by Kirsten Blackmore.
Almost all the members of parliament showed up for the brief debate and the vote. Volker Beck, Green Party MP and gay rights activist, called this a historic day. Banning marriage for same-sex couples must end. Marriage for everyone must come. Anything other than equal rights is discrimination. Many conservatives in the CDU and CSU see that differently. They claim marriage is not for gays. The basis for the survival of our society is the union of man and woman, out of which children are born, and which ensures the future of our society. The Social Democrats all voted for the bill. SPD parliamentarian and gay rights activist Johannes Kahrs was angry about what he says was years of obstruction on the issue by the Conservatives. I'm so fed up with all this pussyfooting around. We deserve equal rights, and I say that includes marriage. In an unusual move, Chancellor Merkel delivered a statement after the vote. For me, marriage, according to the Constitution, is marriage between a man and a woman. And that's why I did not vote in favor of this bill today. It had come as a surprise when on Monday she said MPs should vote with their conscience on this issue.
That report was by Kirsten Blackmore. Oh, Abu, I see some comments coming in right now.
It's a very controversial topic in Africa. Whenever you have same-sex marriages in this debate.
Debatable. Anyway, Johnson Zobu says, congratulations to Germany. I'm sure this represents the voice of Germans. I just hope the West can respect our own rights not to condone homosexuality marriages in our societies.
And 1-4 Charles Nweni from Nigeria wrote, it is a very sad day for me today because of what happened at the German parliament. They have joined the League of Nations that have lowered the standard of God. Well, that's his opinion.
Anyway, keep those comments coming. We might read them whenever we can. The where to go is DW Africa on our Facebook page. Tens of thousands of Ethiopian migrant workers fear deportation from Saudi Arabia following an amnesty program aimed at curbing illegal immigration. Faced with a chronic lack of jobs back home, Ethiopians often enter into abusive job contracts in wealthy Gulf countries each year. They now face an uncertain future. Jenny Nyenge compiled this report.
At Addis Ababa's Bole Airport, girls as young as 12 years can be seen boarding Saudi-bound planes heading to the Middle East to provide cheap labor as domestic workers. Most of them end up in Saudi Arabia. Despite ill treatment, long working hours, and often sexual abuse, they are reluctant to go back home. According to the Regional Mixed Migration Secretariat, a lobby group that monitors migration in Ethiopia, around 260,000 Ethiopians are in Saudi Arabia, some of them with no proper documents. In March this year, Saudi Arabia announced that all undocumented migrants should leave the country before a 90-day amnesty period. But because many flights to Ethiopia have been overbooked, many have chosen to sleep at the airport with the hope that sooner than later they can be able to return home. The not-so-lucky ones are being detained at designated shelters awaiting deportation.
We suffer a lot. We are like people without a government. There's a lot of congestion in the holding room, like cattle in a kraal. We are confused and really don't know who to direct our pleas.
In a move that was widely anticipated, the Saudi government extended the amnesty period by 1 month, but despite that, some migrants like Amin Abdulkadir are not willing to go back home.
Whether it is extended or not, I will not go back. I'm not in a situation to return. First of all, I do not have a job. I was jobless for the last 1 year. Secondly, they told us to return with our own money. I will not spend money for my return or surrender myself. I prefer to be arrested.
In 2013, 165,000 Ethiopians were evicted from their residence in a massive campaign targeting 5 million illegal workers and leading to the death of some as they were being rounded up for forceful deportation.
That was Jenny Nginge with that report.
We are monitoring all your responses here that we are currently airing. And if you would like to reach us, our address is WhatsApp or Facebook, DW Africa.
And we will always read them as usual whenever we have that time. Remember the topic, the hot topic is about the UN Security Council that has cut down the number of peacekeepers in Darfur. Also, the story about same-sex marriages in Germany here can also be commented about. Just go to DW Africa, just like my friend Abu reminded you. And you're still listening to DW's Africa Link program. Live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Abubakar Jallo, hosting your responses.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, debate rages on whether to allow pornographic material on Ghana's television stations.
I just think people are just being hypocrites. And trust me, the same people complaining are the same people who serve for pornographic things on the internet.
Ordinarily, if people want to watch pornography, they go to the internet.
And your responses to how much Germany is doing in Africa to bring clean electricity to homes across the continent. And we will be hearing from a Gambian blogger who is talking about the current situation in the country under President Adama Barrow.
That's correct, Abu, indeed. But first to Ghana, where the media regulator is struggling to deal with an emerging trend of television stations showing pornographic material. Since it lacks the powers to shut down such stations or issue sanctions, the Ghana Media Commission is now appealing to stations to stop showing the material after it received petitions or concerns from some Ghanaians. But Isaac Kalechi, reporting from Accra, says that opinions are, however, divided on the issue of TV stations showing or not showing pornography. Take a listen.
Let the debate start in your homes. Is it right for...
It's a heated debate on pornography and emerging trends of TV stations broadcasting such materials on Ghana's state broadcaster GTV. This has forced some Ghanaians to petition the country's media regulator to end pornographic movies, arguing that the movies shown on three free-to-air TV stations offended the constitutional responsibility of the media. Ghana's Information Minister Mustafa Hamid is equally concerned about the trend.
Matters of pornography and all of those things are private adult material, in my view. Sex is hedged in Africa, okay? So to the extent that sex is also hedged will mean that in our African setting, it is not correct to show that material.
The National Media Commission has already acted on the petition but could only appeal to the media houses cited in the petition to stop showing pornographic materials, as Richard Koshiga, one of the commission members, explains.
It could have been very proper to close down these stations as a punitive measure. For now, the media commission only cautioned them.
Koshiga says efforts are underway by the commission to redraft its content regulation law in order to secure the approval of Ghana's parliament to deal with media houses publishing offensive contents.
And that is why there will be the need for us as a people to relook at that law on content that the Media Commission was seeking to be clothed with. So that gives us a window of opportunity to reintroduce the law in parliament, you know, for it to become an act.
But Ghanaians are divided on the issue of whether to broadcast pornographic materials on TV or otherwise.
I just think people are just being hypocrites because we all watch television and there are other things that are shown on television that others may also feel is offensive. And trust me, the same people complaining are the same people who serve for pornographic things on the internet. So what difference does it make if it's being aired on television station at 12 a.m. or 1 a.m.?
Ordinarily, if people want to watch pornography, they go to the internet. But being on the free-to-air station, I think it's very bad because kids of today do not sleep early. If at night the child goes to tune in to watch this thing, you, the parents, you are not aware of it. This child begins to practice what he or she has watched.
Media content is now a major issue in Ghana, and as media experts push for a legislation to regulate the broadcast media industry, it is yet to be seen how soon such a law will be formulated.
Isaac Kalechi with that report from Accra.
Blog report.
Now in the Gambia, there were high expectations when President Adama Barrow took over from dictator Yahya Jammeh, who had been in office for 22 years. Under Jammeh, the Gambia's economy did fairly well. Citizens were harassed, but citizens were harassed for any criticisms, opposition, and news media were also suppressed significantly. How much has the country changed under Barrow, especially for journalists? Our blog reporter this week is Sherif Bojan, who is a freelance journalist and active online, and he joined my colleague Crispin Wakideu in our studios here in Bonn to discuss this issue.
Before journalists were harassed in the Gambia, it became the most repressive country when it comes to, you know, the practice of journalism for independent journalists and independent media. But since the change of government, we've seen first the influx of journalists who've been in exile returning home. Journalists can today work without looking back at their shoulders to see that somebody, you know, might be watching them or eavesdropping on them or trying to arrest them. You know, we've seen also training of journalists, especially in the areas of ethics. But above all, what Gambia celebrates and the biggest change in the media landscape is the freedom for journalists to operate, to do their work without being afraid.
Another thing, Sherif, is that I understand that you were once a blogger. And I'm just curious to find out, what role did bloggers and journalists like you now play in the transformation that Gambia has gone through now?
Campaign against this government for years leading up to the election were held outside and on the social media by bloggers, by Facebook users, Twitter users. This is the element that changed the game in the Gambia. Before, Gambians would not go out to vote. They were tired of voting. They were tired of, you know, voting for the person perhaps who would not win. And then the power of incumbency was so strong to the extent that people say nothing will ever change. And Jammeh, the former president, played that game along. Nobody can change. No election will ever change my presidency. It was impossible. Mm-hmm. And people believe in it. But the social media group, most of them dissidents, most of them people who fled into exile, continued with this spirited campaign against the government on the social media, Facebook, targeting everybody. Facebook, we would say, was made for Gambia and Gambians. It was too much that the president would even at the time would make reference, these Facebook people are useless and that and that. And he said many times that he does not mind them. When he finally realized that Facebook was damaged, was a huge damage to his presidency and his regime, it was too late. It was 48 hours or under 48 hours before the election when they banned the social media, especially Facebook, they blocked it. But it was too late. People already made up their minds. So I would say that we have changed in the Gambia today, thanks very much to outsiders, you know, Facebook users in particular, the bloggers, you know, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere. This is why we have changed now. And I think if the former president could change one thing, do it all over again today, I'm sure he would at least think about blocking the social media for a long, long time or forever, so Gambians don't have access to it.
So having said that, then how optimistic are you about the Gambia's future, politically, socially, economically, and all that?
I think it's very unpredictable, first of all, within the ruling coalition right now. You feel there is a power vacuum. You feel nobody is in control. We don't have a president. Every ministry run their ministry like autonomously. You know, a lot of contradictions, a lot of public contradictions and attacks, which is, people are worried about. Economic front, it will take almost a miracle to change the fortunes around. But then we have a government. The hope is that they will revive the economy and give birth to this dying economy. But then it doesn't seem like they have any blueprint or economic strategy to get off out of this economic mess. And our hope, Gambian people's hope, is that the government, the silence means they're working something because they are not communicating to the people.
Gambian freelance journalist Sherif Bojan.
Thanks indeed, Abu. And as usual, it's that time of the week when you talk about sports. Joining us now is DW Sports editor Chuck Penfold, and he will start by analysing the semi-final match of the Confederation Cup that saw Germany thrash Mexico 4-1. This means that the final game will be played between Germany and Chile.
This one was almost over before it began. Germany came out really strong in the first 10 minutes. It was like Mexico weren't really almost on the pitch, at least mentally. Mm-hmm. Leon Goretzka had two goals in the space of 8 minutes, and you thought, you know, Germany were pretty well through. Although after that, Mexico settled down. They started to take the game a lot more to the Germans, and it was 2-0 as they went into the halftime break. In the second half, start of the second half, Yogi Löw, the head coach, and his team must have said something to the Germans because they came out a little brighter again, and Timo Werner put a goal away just about on the hour mark. Now, something that a lot of us wondered was why Eintracht Frankfurt midfielder, attacking midfielder Marco Fabian, wasn't on from the start. He came on in the second half, and he scored a really amazing goal from quite a ways out. But Germany replied very quickly after that with Amin Yunus finishing it to make the score 4-1.
Yeah, this must have put aside, I meant to say, doubts on coach Joachim Löw's decision to select a much young and inexperienced team for the Confederation Cup, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember that Joachim Löw has said all along that his priority is not winning this tournament. His priority is looking at some of the younger players to get them to see if they may be ready to go to Russia next year for the World Cup, which is really his goal. But, you know, I was thinking about this morning, it almost shows what an amazing coach Joachim Löw is. And Julian Draxler, who's very young, has done a very good job of captaining this team as well. So it's quite an amazing performance for Germany.
Mm-hmm. And what are the odds for Germany of Germany winning the finals against Chile with star players like Alexis Sanchez and Vidal?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough game. Löw has said he thinks it's going to be sort of a, well, we wouldn't say war, but a match of attrition. These two teams are fairly closely matched. Now, if you look at the FIFA rankings, Germany's third and Chile's fourth, but that doesn't say that much because Chile's pretty much got their top team. Germany doesn't. But they played to a 1-1 draw in the first game in the group stage. So I think this will be a very tight game.
It seems like it's good news for German football at the moment because after all, the under 21-year-old also made it to the finals and they will play against Spain. I mean, isn't it? And who are the favorites to win this particular match?
Well, I think on paper, Spain are the clear favorites. They've got pretty much their first team. Well, the German team has been split up, of course, because some of the teams that are on the Confed Cup team would have actually played on the under 21 team if they'd have been available. They had to sort of split them up. But Germany has had a more difficult road to the final. They had to overcome England on penalties in the semifinal. So I think maybe the mental toughness might be able to carry the day for them.
DW's sports editor Chuck Penfold.
Now, with Africa's energy demand on the rise, the German government is launching a new initiative that's aimed at helping people in Africa
produce their own
energy. Mm. And this is related to a video that we did. And if you'd like to see the video, head to our Facebook
page. And it's like they're like they want to form Germany-style kind of energy cooperatives.
Something related to that.
And so how much difference can this make?
It would make an enormous difference because it's been very successful here in Germany. Let me read you some of the responses. Mm. Ahmed Ibrahim from Kumasi, Ghana said, "It's a great move by the German government. I hope our leaders will make good use of this opportunity, including my country, Ghana."
And Eugene Mwambila says, "This is a good initiative. There is great need to promote and support renewable energy in Africa, especially rural areas where there's little or no access to energy."
Jaden Albert has some doubt. He says he's not sure whether this would benefit Africans.
He's pessimistic. Anyway, Ehosa Godin says, "I see it working for only a few years and then die down. Most of all, this Western innovation and contribution only gets high credits from the media."
Hmm. And Didez from Rwanda said, "Will that project arrive in all African countries?" I hope so.
Well, Lamine Fadera from Brufut, the Gambia, Abu, he says, "From the photo, it looks impressive. While in Africa, our demand in energy is too high. And with sunlight, Africa, and with the swift introduction of the technology, I'm sure a lot of changes will affect in terms of energy supply."
Okay. Thanks for that. And as usual, head to DW Africa if you'd like to see that video. Now, Isaac, imagine getting married at the tender age of 12 or 13. That sounds strange, isn't it?
And it's absurd.
Yeah, but not in Malawi, unfortunately. This has been a long practice. It's a story as well based on the video. And if you don't want to see the video, as usual, our Facebook page, DW Africa. El Shadi Akwem from Accra said, "These are some of the outmoded cultural practices that should not be encouraged."
And Mensa Joseph Albert, also from Ghana, says, "Very bad. This practice has to be stopped. Why are they destroying the innocence of girls?"
Nana from Ghana says, "Why, Malawi? Why?"
"This norm really has the tendency to ruin the lives of these young girls as they get older." That is from Nietzsche from Accra. Anyway, Abu, thank God that's Friday. How about leaving it from there? But of course, we can't leave without...
We're happy that everyone has been on board.
Exactly. Okay. And of course, we can't leave or go for the match, you know, anticipated weekend without saying many thanks to the production crew there, Andrea Yost and Guljabin Abasi, together with Jenny Nyingi. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Abubakar Jallo.
Wishing you a splendid weekend ahead.